Andrews lands in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans? Welcome back. It's been a little bit too long since an episode of Bison Report Radio, but we are ready to rock here on a Friday morning, and we have a phenomenal show for you. Very, very excited for this one. We are going to visit with some absolute experts in the field. My guy, Jason B. Hirshhorn, former beat writer for the Los Angeles Chargers, spent the first 2 years of Easton Stick's Chargers career covering him, has interviewed Easton a one-on-one out in LA, and has the pulse on everything that's going on with number 12, and then have had the chance to kind of do a home and home series. Many of you that follow Bison for follow the Twitter feed saw the Locked On 49ers podcast. They do a few more downloads than we do. They are the number two team-specific NFL podcast as far as downloads are concerned in the entire country. That is an extremely, extremely popular podcast, and we were able to, or I was able to, really stoke the fires with Trey Lance, talking about him as a person, talking about his abilities and you know, kind of his recruiting backstory, saying no to Boise State the night before signing day. Just had some fun with those guys for sure. And I'm really, really excited for you guys to hear their guy, Eric Crocker, covers the 49ers, former NFL defensive back, then also played in the Arena League for a while, is one of the top defensive back evaluators, frankly, on the internet, like, period. A guy that I go to talk constantly to talk DBs with when doing NFL draft prep and stuff. Because specifically with corners, but even with safeties, he's just as bright as there is and certainly has the pulse on everything going on with the 49ers. As I mentioned, co-host of Locked On 49ers, as well as running the Crocker Report, which covers the entire NFL, but certainly with an emphasis on the 49ers. Eric does a phenomenal job. A little bit of scheduling news that we broke here at Bison Report. The football or the basketball team will play a fun little West Coast road swing, and we broke the UNLV portion of that. They will play at Cal Poly in San Luis Obispo on the 12th of November. That's a Friday. Monday the 15th, they will play UNLV in Las Vegas, and then on the 16th, they will play at Arizona. That will be obviously in Tucson, where the Wildcats play. So a really fun little road swing for NDSU, and a fun non-conference schedule. You know, they've got some warm-up games, which I think is something this team missed a season ago, getting, you know, kind of shaken loose a little bit. They've got a exhibition game against Division II Minot State, and then they've got a regular season contest with Concordia Moorhead to kind of get ramped up. Then they've got that road swing, a home game against Tarleton State, who I believe just made the Division I transition. And then Idaho at home at Creighton in a rematch. Northland College at home at Montana State. I believe that's a return contest from a game here. Definite return contest against CSU Northridge. I do remember their game out in Northridge. And then really, I think the premier non-conference game at home, which would be December 13th, Monday night, against Indiana State of the Valley. Really a good way to kind of gauge where NDSU is at, kind of in the mid-major ranks heading into the season. Indiana State, you know, I think everybody would say the Valley is probably, maybe not at the top, just because, you know, Max Asmus and how good everybody thinks South Dakota State's going to be. This North Dakota State team has a chance to be truly special. But this Indiana State club is from a Valley Conference that's really deemed to be one step above the Summit League, and that's a big deal. It's a big deal to host a team like that. I mentioned, you know, it was a big deal to host, certainly to host Missouri State when they were able to do that. Very big deal to host East Tennessee when they were able to do that and win the game without Rocky Cruiser. That's one of the biggest, honestly, victories on the home floor at the Shack. So some stuff to pay attention to. We'll break it all down with Nate Zastro, probably in the entire schedule coming up at a later date. But right now, let's focus on our hashtag Pro Bison. And right now, let's bring on Eric Crocker of Lockdown 49ers and the Crocker Report. All right, Bison fans, we have a very, very special guest on right now. My guy, Eric Crocker. I've known Eric for a long time. One of the best defensive back scouts, eyes, evaluators, really on the internet. But right now, we're with him in his capacity as host of Lockdown 49ers, owner of Crocker Report. I mean, all sorts of things covering the Bay Area. What are your relevant titles here, Eric?
I'd say for this episode, probably Lockdown 49ers, co-host of Lockdown 49ers. We cover the 49ers daily on the Lockdown Network. We just got beat out, and I know you have some Packer fans. For the first time since I joined about 2 months ago, for the first time, we are not the number one football podcast on the network. It is actually Locked On Packers. We're upset with that, about that, and we're going hard and we're pushing, man, to get back to that number one spot.
It's actually another dear, dear friend of mine, Peter Bukowski.
Yeah, he's we have nice little back and forth. We have fun with it.
He's not humble about it either.
Yeah, so it's cool, man, because it makes you. I like being able to compete with someone in any walks of life, right? Because I think competition brings the best out of people. So I try to improve my, what I do with the podcast and how I kind of push it and stuff. And he's kind of definitely giving me more incentive to do that. So it's really awesome.
All right. So you guys have certainly figured out by now, by deductive reasoning, that we're going to talk some Trey Lance. Trey having, such a limited time at North Dakota State, starts 1 year, wins every game, comes back for one showcase game against Central Arkansas, and then opts out of the spring season, the spring FCS season, to enter the NFL draft, where the San Francisco 49ers somewhat shocked the world by selecting him very, very early. And it's something that I talked about for years, months leading up to the draft. Was my opinion, which was just don't let Kyle Shanahan get his hands on this kid, because if he does, it's over. He and Shanahan's system were terrifying for the rest of the NFC to me, and obviously led to the 49ers, picking him over maybe more, certainly a quarterback from a more well-rounded program or from a more popular program in Mac Jones, and then certainly a more popular quarterback prospect in Justin Fields. I think consensus had Fields as the second guy behind Trevor Lawrence. Grocky, what did you think about the fit there? And ultimately, what do you, from your kind of deep in the 49ers camp perspective, why did they roll with Trey after what was an amazing amount of smoke and mirrors around that pick?
Yeah. A ton of smoke and mirrors, and it was really a hectic time for 49er fans and content creators as well. So obviously, like, a really great time. If you're covering the 49ers during that time, everybody was locked in trying to hear any piece of detail on which way the 49ers might try to go with this whole thing. And, for me, I was good with whatever they did, but there were two guys that I liked most, right? First, Justin Fields. I thought Justin Fields was the best quarterback in this class, and that's including Trevor Lawrence. I know that's like kind of like hot takey, but to me, when you just watch the guys play, I'm like, man, well, does Trevor Lawrence have a bigger arm? Is he more accurate? Is he more athletic? Like, and the answer to all that was like, no. Is he just more of a winner? I mean, I guess that's debatable because of Lawrence's freshman year. But outside of that, we saw those two go head-to-head. I thought they competed. There was a lot to like about Phil. So I liked him a ton. Then I had Trevor Lawrence. And then after Lawrence, I had Trey Lance. And there were a lot of people that definitely wanted to push back on the thought of someone taking Trey Lance high or having him that high in general. And my thing is, man, like, first thing that we should try to learn from some past mistakes, right? And you look at guys like Justin Herbert, who probably should have been taken higher, but guys or even like a guy like Patrick Mahomes, when you see a guy that has elite physical traits, your first thing should probably be, okay, like, is this a guy I should take a chance on? I think right now the answer to that is yes. Now you have to figure out the other aspects of it, and this is why I really like Trey Lance so much, and it's going to bring me to my next comment. I tweeted out before the draft, so this is, he's not a Niner yet or anything like that, so it's not a biased comment. If I had to bet my life savings on any of these quarterbacks being successful, it would be Trey Lance. And I tweeted that out, and my reasoning for that is when you see his ability, like, that's great. They all have ability. When you start to find out about the person that this guy is, the man, the young man that he is, and how he prepares, and, you know, the system that he was in coming out of North Dakota State, and how high level of a person that they were saying, and I'm listening to Rich Eisen, and he's talking about how he was blown away by him, and then you hear Daniel Jeremiah sat down with him and said, hey, like, this is as high of a level kid as I've ever been around. And at this point, I mean, this is a kid that's still 20 years old. You start to hear these things, and me being around guys in the NFL and understanding how guys are, right? Like, why are guys bust in the NFL? It's not because of lack of talent, right? It's because of, like, their mental makeup and how they prepare. And when you start to find out that you don't have any of those issues with Trey Lance on top of the ability he has, that's a guy that I'm willing to bet on. And there are a lot of people that had pushed back on him with, well, he hasn't had to go through any adversity. I'm like, didn't North Dakota State bring in a guy from, like, Iowa State or something to play? Like, they had a D1 transfer at quarterback, and he was able to kind of beat him out. I don't know exactly what the situation was, but I saw that there was some level of a competition, right?
Oh, for sure, yeah. So, you know, Easton Stick stays in the program for 5 full years, is Carson Wentz's understudy for a time. As a redshirt freshman, spells Wentz for broke his hand for like 8 weeks, comes in, leads them to the championship. Carson comes back, wins the championship. Then Stick starts for 3 years, basically. Right. And then he's drafted by the LA Chargers. Not a first round pick like Carson or Trey, right. But he's drafted. He's a big deal. You know,
getting drafted out of North Dakota State, regardless of where, that is a big deal.
So then they've got an incumbent kid who was a scholarship kid, older than him. So he's got to beat him out. He's more talented than this kid, but he's got an incumbent kid older than him that was sitting behind Easton. Plus, they bring in Iowa State kid Zeb Noland, who ended up losing his job at Iowa State to Brock Purdy. Pretty good quarterback. I think a lot of people like, you know, his game, even as an NFL prospect. But yeah, this was no, you talk to people really inside the program, and they would tell you, like, Trey's different. It's probably going to go this way. But publicly, and certainly, you know, kind of any other way, it was an open competition. He had to beat out, like I said, a kid who had been in the program longer, plus a Big 12 transfer. It was not. And you talk about adversity too. I mean, this is a kid who grew up a Gophers fan wanting to play, you know, Big Ten football, would have been either the best or the second best quarterback in the Big Ten, whatever, you know, however you want to rank him with Fields. And his hometown team said no thanks. Iowa said no thanks. Iowa State said no thanks. Most of them said, you want to play safety, you want to play outside backer, et cetera, et cetera. There's plenty of adversity for this young man.
Right. So, and those were things that kind of drew me to him. And I'm like, man, I know, like, how he's going to prepare when he gets in this organization, and just how people talked about him. I'm like, that's a guy that I want. So just in general, kind of my thoughts on him, and I know I gave like a long-winded answer, but that's the kind of guy I would bet on because of the adversity, because of the person that he is. And then obviously the tools that he possesses as well. That's the cherry on top.
Yeah. you know, I've seen – people ask about his arm strength. I mean, I've seen him throw it 60 yards from a knee and just kind of, you know, just warm up tossing from one knee, flicking the ball 50, 60 yards down the field. That dude's arm is unlike anything I've ever seen. And like I said, I mean, Carson Wentz was here who, for, you know, some of his faults, arm strength of the size of his arm has never, ever, ever been a question. Trey's a very, very special kid. Talk to me about camp, because you have kind of boots on the ground there. You are certainly, you know, more in tune than I am currently, and want to just kind of get initial reports. Some of the stuff that I've seen on Twitter, mostly good. He had maybe like one up and down day, but every other day that I've seen the 49ers people that I follow, things have been good. What have you been hearing about his performance in camp? And a guy, by the way, who, you know, kind of went up to the very, very last minute before signing his deal.
Yeah, so there's two ways to kind of look at it. Obviously, like, you can just kind of get the feel the pulse of how 49ers Twitter is talking about in the sense of the beat writers and things. And so far, it seems like everyone is very, very pleased with what they've seen so far. Now, I mean, and even some have gone to say this is the best rookie quarterback, or this is the best quarterback that we've seen with the 49ers having a long time in the sense of how it looks. There are some that have just said, hey, this is the best rookie that we've ever seen the 49ers have, you know, like, so he's getting a lot of high praise from some high level guys, even guys like Matt Maiocco, who doesn't just talk out of his butt for the 49ers. He's been covering the 49ers for 20 plus years. Once he starts heaping praise, and he was a guy who was banging the Mac Jones drum. I mean, Maiocco wanted Mac Jones so bad. And then they draft Trey Lance, and he was like, oh, not a pure passer, and all these different other things he was talking about on this podcast. But then you listen to the last episode of his podcast, and you can feel him smiling about Trey Lance through your speakers. Like, you can hear the excitement. Like, you can hear just how, like, I've never heard Maiocco like this. So that's high praise there. Now, my perspective of everything is, I mean, he has had his, I don't even want to say ups and downs, because it seems like there's been more ups than downs, but he's had his moments where maybe a ball is behind a guy, or maybe he missed a guy, or maybe he sailed one out of bounds a little bit. But so far, everything that's coming out and what I'm kind of getting from it is he is who they thought they were getting when they drafted him. And I think that's probably the ultimate compliment that you can pay to a guy, because there are times where you draft a guy high, and as soon as you report and you start seeing this guy live, and it's just like, this guy can't play. And you got to hope that things start to come around for the guy, and you just kind of maybe take your development slower, almost like a Green Bay Packers. Not saying that Jordan Love can't play, but, you know, it was like, hey, you're not even the second string there. You're going to be inactive on game day. There definitely won't be a situation like that for Trey Lance this year. But everything has been very encouraging. It seems like he's building towards eventually being the guy. Kyle Shanahan, the way he's kind of described it is, right now there is no competition until Trey Lance can outplay Garoppolo. If you talk to the beat writers, it sounds like Trey Lance is outplaying Garoppolo. I think what people are really seeing is the limitless ability of having a guy like Trey Lance at quarterback, as opposed to a guy like Garoppolo, who can be efficient, but also somewhat limits your offense.
How much do you think it is? Because I think what I've understood is they're just not giving him the chance to play with the ones. Do you think any of this unlimited potential being on display is just him carving up the twos? Is that possible?
Well, I think some of it is that, right? But you can, it's almost like a NFL schedule, right? You can only play who's on your schedule. So you play the teams are on your schedule, and you go 13-3. I know the Packers dealt with this a couple years ago, right? When they went to the NFC Championship and played the Niners. But that year people were like, oh, cupcake schedule, blah, blah. And it's like, dude, like, these are the teams that we had to play. And we beat their butt, and it is what it is, right? Yep. I think that's what's going on with Trey Lance, where, okay, you guys got me with the twos. Okay, well, I'm going to show everything that I can do with the twos. And it's really cool to see, you know, the 49ers, the way they rotate their skill guys, even though he's with the twos, at different times, he'll still have Deebo Samuel in there, Brandon Ayuk, George Kittle. So he's still throwing to those guys and making plays. Maybe some of it has to do with him not having to go up against a guy like Fred Warner, who's, you know, highest paid defensive player on your team, or, you know, Eric Armstead or Nick Bosa and those guys. But I'm curious to see when he does start to push to get those reps. As of right now, I don't want to say we're jumping the gun on Trey Lance, but it's been very limited practices. I think he had like 6 OTA practices with the team, and then you come to training camp and today's like his fifth day. but or 6 day, one of those. You know, I mean, we're talking about 10 practices with an NFL team and trying to push a guy who's been there for multiple years out of a starting spot. So I think it will happen eventually. I think right now Kyle Shanahan's trying to keep the, you know, just keep the noise down a little bit and let things happen a little bit more organically. But 49er fans and the media seem to be really excited and pleased with what they're seeing from Trey Lance. And it seems like they want, like, hey, man, start getting these guys some reps now.
So what do you think? Do you think there's a deeper meaning behind that? Is it trade value? Is it kind of that old school mentality of, you know, a rookie shouldn't play week one? Why do you think Kyle is married to this idea of Jimmy being the week one starter?
I think just because you don't have to play Trey Lance, right? You look at New York and there's, you know, they're more than likely going to have to play Wilson. You look at Jacksonville and, you know, yeah, you got Gardner Minshew and some of these other guys, but I mean, those are guys that contributed to a one win team, right? So Trevor Lawrence is going to be the guy. When you look at the 49ers or you even look at the Chicago Bears with Justin Fields, they don't have to play the rookie right now. And I think Kyle Shanahan is, I don't want to say he's trying to push it off, but it's like, man, like, we don't have an issue right now. We have Garoppolo. He's a starter. He wins games. We're good when he's playing. The issue is he doesn't play very often, right? Like half the time he's out.
Sure.
But if we have him there, like there's no rush to have to play the kid. Now, if it gets to the point where it's just undeniable to where it's like, look, he's just better than Garoppolo, then now you have to either look for a trade possibly because, I mean, who wants to have $27 million just sitting on the bench when that could have been another – three players.
Right, yeah.
So, yeah, there's...
How many
I think that's the pushback.
Right, and how many teams have quarterbacks that are worse than Garoppolo?
Right, you know, I think he's a starting level quarterback in the NFL. So,
sure.
You know, you have to look at it from that standpoint. And then I think if Garoppolo does get moved at this time, it'll be because there's an injury. Now, Carson Wentz, that could have been a very interesting opportunity to maybe move him. But, you know, he'll be back by like week five. So it's not like he'll be out...
Right.
The whole year. So I think it'd take a serious injury from a team to the quarterback position, almost like what we saw. And I know you're familiar with this situation, Philadelphia Eagles and Sam Bradford. You know, Bradford was on the Eagles and they traded him Minnesota up there in the NFC North. And that was when Teddy Bridgewater tore his knee up and they were able to get a first round pick for Sam Bradford. So I think you look at a situation like that. I think that's when Garoppolo can get moved. If they don't have an opportunity like that, I'd assume that they would prefer Garoppolo at the very least start the season. And I don't think they want to make a big deal. And I think they want the Trey Lance thing to happen a little bit more organically than have to force it after like 10 practices.
Sure. All right. Last one, and then I'm going to let you go. What is your gun to your head prediction? When do we see Trey Lance in action for outside of obviously the preseason?
Oh, man, it's tough. Oh, man, that's tough. But gun to my head, gosh, I think if – okay, I'll answer it like this. If you were to ask Kyle Shanahan, gun to his head, when, you know, hey, we want to – you know, when do you want to play Trey Lance? I would say week 17 in a game where you have maybe your playoff position locked up and, you know, now you can just put your rookie in for a game at the end of the year to get him those type of reps before you move on from Garoppolo. Because I do – feel like as of right now, he probably feels a little bit more comfortable that he can make a real legit playoff push with Garoppolo at quarterback, you know, just with his experience being on the team and his understanding of the offense. Probably feel a little bit more comfortable with that, him, you know, going through different levels of ups and downs as a 49er, as opposed to throwing a rookie in and having to kind of hold his hand throughout an entire season. That's just kind of my theory on how Kyle Shanahan is probably looking at it.
All right, everybody. Eric Crocker from Lockdown 49ers. Thanks so much for your time, Croc. I appreciate it.
Oh, man. Thanks for having me on anytime.
Love Croc. Really appreciate his time. Appreciate him making the time. Enjoyed my time on Lockdown 49ers and certainly enjoyed the content that he was able to bring to all of you guys. And I would suggest it, folks, if you are a Trey Lance fan, and I know basically everyone is, I think, you know, especially when you start starting games, which I think is going to happen sooner rather than later, Lockdown 49ers is just a must subscribe pod. I think it's going to be worth your time. It's a daily podcast, which is fun too. You just get, you know, in general, I talk a lot. You guys know that as fans of the show. So that was a 40-minute show. That's out of the norm for them. It's usually between 20 and 25 minutes, daily podcast, get your 49ers news dump and go. And I really like the format. My guy, Peter Bukowski, who works for me at Packer Report, is actually the host of Locked On Packers, which is the number one team-specific NFL podcast. And I always give Kroc and Brian Peacock a tough time about that. But really good stuff from Eric. Really appreciate him coming on the show. Second, Jason B. Hirschhorn, formerly of Sports Illustrated, formerly of the LA Chargers beat, talking all things Easton Stick. All right, and joining me now is my good friend Jason Hirschhorn, formerly of, what was the LA Chargers publication that you basically ran? Not basically, you did run.
It changed names multiple times. I just said I was the Chargers beat reporter for Sports Illustrated.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Living out on the West Coast, and we are checking in on our boy Easton Stick here on Bison Report Radio. And he's in an interesting spot. I talked to him at Carson Wentz's charity softball game, and we just kind of spoke about, you know, the situation that he's in, which is that there's a younger, arguably, not even arguably, our younger, better quarterback at, you know, in LA, or if he's not better, he's certainly someone that they have more invested in and has proven he can, you know, win on that level. And so, you know, Easton's kind of in a situation where he has to be ready. And I think that's tough for someone who, you know, was a multiple year starter in high school, started for 3.5 years at North Dakota State. It's got to be kind of a weird position to be in, knowing that the guy in front of you is not really jumpable.
Yeah, he's really not. Justin Herbert isn't just clearly the starter for the Chargers. He's, I think, inarguably one of the best quarterback assets, and therefore just one of the best assets, period, in the entire league. He showed that last year when he won Offensive Rookie of the Year, had one of the most prolific seasons that we've ever seen from a first-year starting quarterback, let alone a rookie. So that's just not going to be in the cards for Easton Stick, barring injury. So the real question is, where does he fall on the depth chart, and is that in front of or behind the final cut come September?
For sure. What do you think they saw in him? You were, I believe, covering the team when they...
when they drafted him, yeah.
Yeah, when they drafted him, you know, we're still in the Rivers era. Had Tyrod around too, potentially. What do you think they saw in him?
Yeah, they drafted him in the fifth round of what ended up being Philip Rivers' final season with the Chargers. And I think his selection was indicative of a direction that the front office and the coaching staff at the time ultimately wanted to go. Philip Rivers is one of the most prolific passers in NFL history. But one of the things you would not be able to say about him at any point in his career, not just late in his career, was that he was never fleet of foot. And it's an element of offense that has become more and more common in the NFL. Easton Stick doesn't have a lot of the skills that Philip Rivers has, but one of the things that he does have in abundance is mobility. And you're seeing more and more quarterbacks come in the league with that as a primary part of their skill set. So while Easton Stick, by NFL standards, was fairly raw, that's the primary reason that he didn't go on the first or the second day of the draft, he has a lot of physical ability, especially in terms of that, you know, that mobility. So I think the Chargers really like that about him. They still do. If you look at the decisions that they've made subsequently, you know, Justin Herbert, obviously a much bigger player, but he's also mobile. It's a part of the offense, or was a part of the offense in 2020. And even with this new offense with Joe Lombardi under Brandon Staley, it's going to be part of it again. So Easton Stick's best asset coming out of college is going to be his best case for making the roster in 2021.
They had a few openers in there for him last year. Do you think that's something, you know, where he's actually a part of the game script? It was kind of, you know, we're both Packers guys and they drafted Randall Cobb, right? And everybody thought, well, you could do some cool stuff with him because they ran Wildcat at Kentucky with Randall and he threw some left-handed touchdown passes and it looked cool and yada, yada, yada. But at the same time, if there are, you know, Easton Stick packages, folks, you're reminded certainly of like Taysom Hill in New Orleans. But is it in the Chargers' best interest to take Justin Herbert off the field? Justin Herbert, not to Rodgers level yet, but, you know, thought of as you mentioned, one of the top quarterback assets in all of the National Football League. So do you think that that can be a part of things? Is he, his ability, can they play together? I mean, does he have the ability to get on the field and make an impact?
If the question is just, can he, the answer is yes. But I think you pose the more important question. Does this actually make sense for the Chargers? Because Justin Herbert, even as a rookie, was the most consistent quarterback that they've had since maybe 2018. Phillip Rivers, it had been, you know, not that long, but it was a pretty high level that he came in with. He's presumably going to be even better in his second year, his first full offseason or close to a full offseason in the NFL. Easton Stick can do a lot of interesting things. As you know, he is not built like a lot of quarterbacks. While he's not super tall, he is pretty thick, and that opens up a lot of possibilities in something not totally unlike the Taysom Hill mode.
Smith, it's what he's built like.
Yeah, and you know, obviously having Joe Lombardi as your offensive coordinator, a guy who spent most of the past decade with the Saints, would make the idea of having a Taysom Hill-like figure seem palatable. But again, I don't think that is a better use of their assets than just letting Justin Herbert run that offense because of how much better he is. So they might have that in the playbook. I'd be actually relatively surprised if that wasn't something that they had put in there, but I don't really think it's something they're going to use on a regular basis just because it doesn't really give them the best chance to win, which I don't think is disrespectful to Easton Stick. It's just that's how good Justin Herbert is.
I totally agree, and I totally get it. The Chase Daniel thing, explain that to me. I struggled with that because if you really do believe in Easton Stick, at least to the point of rostering him, you know, Chase Daniel has no upside. I don't think that's, it might sound disrespectful, but I don't even think that that's that, you know, crazy to say. I just don't think he's got any upside. I think we know exactly what Chase Daniel is, certainly at this point in his career. So why do that?
I don't disagree with your analysis. I would point out, though, that you could have said basically the same thing when the Chicago Bears signed him, when the Detroit Lions signed him. So there was something that he brings to the table that does not manifest on the field on game days, if he is indeed playing, but the coaching staff's feel he brings to the locker room, he brings to those meetings. And that could be ultimately what makes Chase Daniel a regular season member of the Chargers this year. Now, unlike in the past, he's not getting paid a lot of money. He has a base salary of basically the veteran minimum, and it will cost them nothing to release him if that's ultimately the way that they go. So he doesn't have that same level of job security that he had with the Lions and before that with the Chicago Bears. But he's someone with a connection to Joe Lombardi that obviously is going to matter here. He's played in multiple versions of that Saints offense. That could be a big part of why they brought him in. Probably is the biggest part of why they brought him in, because even though Justin Herbert is, you know, obviously he's going to be the starter, it is a new offense for him, even if it's incorporating some of the things that they used last year under Shane Steichen, and having Chase Daniel there might be useful for that transition. Now, they could also just decide that they're going to carry three quarterbacks. They have done that each of the past two seasons. And in that case, whether Chase Daniel is the number two or the number three, Easton Stick presumably would be the other guy getting the job. The Chargers did sign KJ Costello, an undrafted rookie. And you know, I suppose that he has a chance, but he was someone that they just signed this past week. And I think that indicates that he's most likely going to be a camp body, and his best case scenario is landing on the practice squad. I think it's ultimately going to come down to if they want to keep two or three quarterbacks. And my guess, just because Joe Lombardi is the new offensive coordinator there, Chase Daniel is probably dealing with the inside track there, but Easton Stick can make that roster. And I wouldn't be surprised if he's active on game days, at least in some situations, because of the things that we spoke about earlier, that he is so athletic, they can do all of these things. And if they want to go into some of those packages, he's available to do that.
Talk to me about preseason football, because I think it was incredibly unfortunate for Easton Stick's development that they lost out on the preseason last year, and how important will, though it is shortened to three games, how important will this be for him, not only to get a look, but for him to just play against players with a different colored jersey on?
I mean, obviously it's going to be important. That doesn't require any real analysis. Any live rep that a quarterback that inexperienced can get is going to make a difference. It's also going to help with the evaluation process. What I think is actually maybe helping Easton Stick a little bit here is that while it is a new offense for him, it's kind of a new offense for everybody there other than Chase Daniel. So it's going to put him at no worse than an even playing field with KJ Costello. He's going to be able to learn the offense at basically the same pace that Justin Herbert is. That means that while he could struggle early, we have seen him struggle in practice thus far. He threw multiple picks already. Obviously, that's not great. But part of this is just the learning process of a new offense. So it's almost, you know, you wouldn't forgive it necessarily, but it is going to lessen the impact on the evaluation process when he has those early mistakes. Now, he has to iron those out. He has to look good in the preseason. But I think there's a little bit of extra leash there because everyone there other than Chase Daniel is dealing with a new system.
All right. Kind of gun to your head, how do you see the next 2 or 3 years of Easton Stick's career playing out? Just because I feel like, you know, In my conversations with him too, I don't know as though Los Angeles is the long-term option for him. I think he wants to find a way to be one of those 32. Whether or not that's realistic or whether or not maybe he has, and hey, Chase Daniels had a hell of a gig. That's been or even Taysom Hill's career, you know, would be a hell of a gig. But I think, you know, sitting behind a guy he knows he'll never jump is probably not that high on his list.
No, and especially a quarterback that young. I know he came into the NFL a little older than a draft pick typically does, but you know, he's 25 now or almost 26, somewhere around there. He's a young player. Of course he wants to start, but I, like you, don't know how realistic that is. Now, with LA in particular, even though it's a new coaching staff, keep in mind this is still the same front office that drafted him in the fifth round. So there is still some investment there. And if Easton Stick was able to win the backup job this year, I think that bodes really well for his future in LA because, again, it's a front office that drafted him. You know, they wouldn't necessarily have to pay through the roof for a backup quarterback. He's someone with not the same skill set as Justin Herbert because there really aren't that many quarterbacks in the entire NFL who have that, but someone who can be a reasonable facsimile of some of those elements, can run a version of the same offense if something were to happen to Justin Herbert. So I think that bodes well for him if he's going to ultimately be a backup. But if he loses out to Chase Daniel, whether that's because he doesn't perform well, because Chase Daniel just is going to get the job short of throwing up on his shoes, if that's the situation, then Easton Stick is almost certainly looking at a future outside of LA, even if he's on the roster this year. He's going to the third year of his four-year rookie deal. I don't know that that's going to guarantee him much in 2022 if he's still there. And at that point, he's going to be like a lot of quarterbacks are when they're not starters, just sort of on that backup market, trying to find the best situation. Maybe for him, that's going to be going to Philly, where his old offensive coordinator is now relocated. So we're going to see a lot of those possibilities crop up if he doesn't win the backup job this year. But again, if he does, that can totally shift the direction of his career, regardless of whether he's ever going to be a starter.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, if you're looking in that backup role, I think, looking for two things, either the ability to win a championship or the ability to play. One of those two things. And the ability to play can come from finding a guy that you think is, you know, the 25th, 26th, 30th, 29th best starter in the league, or somebody who gets hurt a lot. And those are, I think, kind of the two pathways to actually starting an NFL game on Sundays. And that, I think, is obviously the ultimate goal for Easton Stick. Jason Hirschhorn, thank you so much for coming on and talking a little North Dakota State football, talking a little Easton Stick. We appreciate it.
Anytime, Ross.
I want to thank Jason and, of course, shout out our guy, Zach Willis, new football analyst at Bison Report, Zach Willis, and his good buddy, Quinn Allo, the two, maybe only, but certainly the two biggest Chargers fans that I know. Want to, you know, hopefully we're able to bring some light into what's going on in Chargers land to those guys and certainly to all the Easton Stick fans listening to the show. Folks, we really want to thank you for listening, and we will be back. We're going to be on a little bit more regular schedule now that fall camp is here. We will catch you next time, and go Bison.